Congratulations! You're listening to Congratulations Pine Tree,
the Bay's number one arts and culture podcast, everyone!
With Kate Rhodes.
And Maysoon Wazwaz, who's on one today.
That's good. Love it. Love it. Love it. Love it. A couple days ago, I went to that emergence thing. I only caught a tiny section of it.
It's like, it's...
Emerging Arts Professionals.
Emerging Arts Professionals. EAP. And every year they have a conference.
I think this was not a place for me to be. I'm an artist.
Kate was saying how it seemed like it was more for like the arts professional, which is,
definitely
which is what the
accurate,
fucking title is.
Because it was like, what are the tools in our toolbox? Deep listening.
And what was it? What did you think your tools were?
Like, well, just I mean, I didn't go to the breakout group. I peaced out of there and got an ice cream cone. But thank you very much to my good friend, Patricia Carino, who invited me to come. I did. Do you know Christy Hollihan? We interviewed her in the closet.
Yes. I don't know her, and I kind of
she
remember.
Runs Rock, Paper, Scissors.
Right, that's what I was thinking.
She is a pistol.
Why?
She got up
Tell
there, and
more.
She's like, I'm wearing professional drag right now. If I had it my way, I would not be up on a stage. I don't like the celebritization aspect of this.
Wow.
We should all be sitting in a circle. I don't think my experiences are any more valid than anyone in the audience.
Wow.
And it was this whole thing.
Go, Christy.
It was pretty intense. It was pretty intense. I loved it.
Well, I mean, if you think about the organization she runs, I'm sure she really means that.
I was wondering if you had a take on this whole thing about all the executive directors stepping down. There was an article about it this week on KQED.
That's right. It was they referenced Lex at Lex Lifeheight from SoMarts, and then I can't remember who the other director was that they.
Margo
from ProArts.
Yeah, she was the most recent executive director who stepped down.
I mean, it was interesting because I'm friends with Lex. I'm friends with Lex sort of just through the arts. She posted the article, but then also commented like, oh, I didn't realize, you know, I was stepping down. I thought I was taking another job, still working within the, you know, the arts capacity, like nonprofit arts capacity with the city where I can have more impact on what's actually happening in the Bay Area.
Yeah. But she won't functionally be the executive director anymore.
Yeah, but stepping down kind of I think that article made it sound like, oh, these places are going under. Like, you know, director's leaving. Must be hard times at those places, don't you think?
Sure.
I feel like it had a little bit of a vibe
putting
like
them
that.
All together like that seemed kind of to ignore some of the specifics.
Right, because I actually think Lex is probably leaving SoMarts in a really, really strong position. I mean, yeah. I think she's done quite a bit for that organization.
And, like, there's a lot of turnaround at these places. People
well, she's been there, I think,
move
since 2008 or something.
Circulate.
So she's
and
actually been there for a long time. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I think you know, journalists should be careful about how they're wording these kinds of transitions within the arts, because I think everyone is so on end or, you know, high strung about arts organizations closing or having trouble with their finances because of everything that's happening in the city and budget, you know, budgets being cut whatever, or not being able to raise money. So I think just like framing it as like, oh, there's more shifting going on. Everyone watch out. It's just kind of like a little bit irresponsible to me, you know?
That's funny. I feel like we do that sometimes.
We what? We like raise
we're
the alarm
like,
for no
we're
fucking
all going to die. It's over. Also, on a brighter note, sometime in the last weekend, I was very lucky to have seen Phonique, her one-woman show, Pho-Real.
Pho-Real. Phonique is awesome.
It was so good, Maysoon. I was screaming.
You were?
I loved it.
Did she perform? Not a counterpulse.
I was not screaming as much as the drunk women in the corner, though.
Oh.
They were very upsetting. I think the people that run the place, Oasis, had to come and have a word with them. I think it was like a bachelorette party or something.
Oh,
not
no,
really,
really,
but I don't know what the hell they were. But not that they were heckling, but they were kind of heckling, but with love. Like during like if there was a quiet moment, they'd be like, you're amazing.
They were screaming during a quiet moment.
Yeah. And
that's
we're like,
terrible.
Come on, people, chill it. Anyhow, Phonique does a version of I think Cindy Tells Me. Do you know that song by Brian Eno?
Totally.
That's better than the original.
Oh, really?
I wish I had it on tape.
Maybe we can find it.
Let's have her come and sing it to us.
Cindy, tell me, what will they do with their lives living quietly? Like laborers' wives, perhaps they'll reacquire those things they
did this monologue beforehand about how when we talk about male artists, we say their last names, like Rauschenberg. You know.
Oh, we refer to them by their last name.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then when we talk about women artists,
we say their first name, you know, mm-hmm. Marina, Yoko.
Oh, no.
Cher. Yeah. Bjork.
Well, Bjork just goes by Bjork. She's not like Bjork uh-huh. Smith.
And then at the end, she talks about how Shepard Fairey was interviewed. You remember Shepard Fairey?
Of course, I remember Shepard Fairey.
He was interviewed on a podcast, incidentally.
Ooh, damn.
The interviewer asked him like who his guys are, who his like hero artists are.
Oh, okay.
And he said, Kruger.
Yeah.
Barbara Kruger.
Oh, I know.
And I hooted. I was like, what?
That actually makes a lot of sense if you think about
it. Nobody else in the audience had any response to that. I don't think they understood it because it wasn't an art audience.
They thought it was Freddy Krueger?
I don't know what. I don't know what they thought. But I love that.
Wait, that happened in the performance?
Uh-huh. I think that was the run of the show ended over the weekend. But if you ever get a chance to, please
like
see Phonique.
Phonique.
Oh, anything else? There was dancing. There was lip syncing. It was
Was she in drag the whole time, or did she go in and out of it?
She did all her costume changes on stage.
Okay.
She had like a little mirror, little makeup mirror.
Yeah.
No. Libby Schaff is the Antichrist.
What's going on with her? I fucking hate her.
She made it so that there is a ban on nighttime protests in Oakland.
Well, not that there's a ban, but that you have to apply for a permit, which is basically like making it a ban. Is this her first big move as a mayor? Do you know? Have
one
you heard
other
much
thing
about
that she did before this was she's like on in favor of building a high rise on this land that the
which
city
is
selling.
Also hugely controversial.
Yeah, people are upset about that. Veronica Graham, friend of the show, lives in that part of town, Eastlake. Mm-hmm. Not into it. Not to mention, like, the developers conned these Asian seniors from Chinatown to come to one of the city hall meetings and say that, and like kind of do a demonstration in favor of building it.
Yeah.
But it turns out that they lied to them and said that there was going to be all this like
affordable
like free
living or,
housing for seniors, which is not true. And like the developers paid them to got a little shuttle bus and all this shit mm-hmm. and gave them signs and had them come to this thing.
How did that come out?
A reporter started talking to them and most of them didn't like speak a lot of English and stuff. And so,
Libby Schaff is trying to turn Oakland into San Francisco.
I mean, I think that's kind of what people are saying, that she's not doing what needs to be done to keep what's happening in San Francisco from happening in Oakland.
Yeah.
So that sucks because she was my number two on my three-tier ballot. So this is actually all my fault. What's going on with the old Ed Lee?
The mayor's approved an additional $7 million to go to San Francisco arts organizations over the next two years. You heard about this.
Mm-hmm.
Over the next 2 years, which is really exciting news. And it was kind of prompted by not this decision that the mayor made was prompted by this work that this independent nonprofit group called ABBA or Arts for a Better Bay Area, the work they were doing. It's Ebony McKinney and Lex Lifeheit were the co-founders of ABBA, and they were basically pulled this group together of representatives from the arts. Any it was open to anyone, and I think a lot of people from sort of the large or the what they call the big arts organizations and some of the small arts organizations got together to sort of discuss what kind of budget they could propose to the city. Well, there's always been like a battle between the big arts organizations like the opera, the museums, the theater, like the big kind of SF groups, and the smaller institutions, which I didn't realize that they would be. Basically, they're fighting for the same amount of money. And the big arts groups have always gotten, according to the article, and probably according to any public record you could look at, the big arts groups have always gotten sort of the lion's share. It's been decided that the first year of this two-year funding cycle, $7 million over 2 years, the first year funding will go towards smaller nonprofits because the group that ABBA put together has deemed, you know, that smaller groups are in more need. They're like in more sort of dire straits with the...
Damn right.
Yeah. So it's interesting. It's good, but it's
how
all
small.
Mid-size to small.
Like Root Division?
Root Division would be, I think Root Division, like I think SOEX might be mid-size. Small. Mid. Root Division is small.
Small. How about my underbed gallery?
Well, your underbed gallery that doesn't exist yet. Uh-huh. That would be
but
like.
But I'm talking like hidey holes.
Hidey holes.
You know, micro holes.
Well, they have
holes.
To be nonprofits.
Let's think of the smallest nonprofit. So 501c3. Listeners, do you know? Call in 419-351-6606. Or you can tweet us at Pine Tree Podcast. You can also text that phone number. You could also email us. congratulationspinetree@gmail.com.
I'm fascinated by the quarrel between the big and small arts groups. And I guess that in the article it was saying that big...
Quarrel?
A quarrel.
Quarrel.
Between these big and small
groups.
A row. So the big groups attacked smaller groups, calling them fringe elements after seeking... After seeking public money for cultural equity. Whoa, that's crazy. So it seems like these larger institutions need to do more kind of soul searching around like who their public is and who they're serving, you know, to some degree. Or like what kind of city they want to be part of or creating. What is that face?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So but I do think the conversations that were that were had between like in ABBA's or Arts for Better
Barry. ABBA.
In
they
Arts
do
for
call
Better
it that.
Barry
they
areas,
call it ABBA. Yeah, I heard
the
Ebony
conversations that were happening in those meetings, I think, was actually really useful as far as like bringing those groups together and actually like fleshing out those differences in those conversations and trying to like help maybe the large groups understand what the small groups are doing and how it feeds into the larger ecosystem of the arts. You know, like they all are important. It's not you can't
Come
just support
on,
the fucking like
people.
Big guys.
God damn.
And so what I thought was interesting was that five directors, they're called, the big groups are called the SF Arts Alliance, and 15 of the directors from that group signed the letter saying that we think the first year of funding should go to the smaller, the mid-sized
well,
and small organizations.
So how many millions of dollars is that? Is this $7 million split between the 2 years?
I don't know.
Is it $7 million a year?
No, it's $7 million over 2 years. Oh, okay.
Do they get half of that money?
Yeah, that wasn't determined. I think it's either half or however much is
That's
asked
great.
For within that. I don't know how that
is
works.
Is this great?
It's good. It's good. But like, as the article points out, you know, there's bigger issues at play here that, you know, the arts budget for the city has been cut a huge percent in the past 10 years. Like we're lower, our budget, the arts budget in the city is lower today than it was 10 years ago, which seems problematic given how much money is flooding into the city. So it's good. Yes, it's good. It's good. Smaller organizations are going to get more money. But I think there's like a larger, issue at hand that still needs to be addressed or that needs to be kind of worked out. And I think, you know, I think people like Lex and Ebony and ABBA and groups that really care are going to be doing that work. They're going to be continuing that. So I'm super excited about it.
We're back here in our old stomping grounds of Arbor Cafe, where you can get a $500 cup of coffee for a mere $9,000. Talking to art writer, curator, everything, Dorothy Santos.
Hi, everyone. I feel like you have your hands in a lot of different fields, and that to me, when in thinking about interviewing you, is really exciting. Like, I know that you have a background in tech, biotech, working at Genentech, and you have a proclaimed interest in digital arts and tech, where tech and art worlds meet.
Gosh, my academic background, or my professional and my academic background, has been really, it's like rhizomatic, because I think when most people a few years ago just knew me only as a writer. And then when they found out that I worked in biotech for as long as I did, they're like, whoa, I didn't think that you, wow, really? You have a day job? And then a lot of people didn't even know I was in grad school while I was at Genentech.
Oh man, that's hard to hide.
I was always drawn to, and still am, to projects and artists that are working with the body activating a space. So technically, an artwork doesn't exist unless the body is actually there. When I started thinking about it, oh, wow, well, my job for 10 years was working in biotech, you know, and predominantly on ophthalmology and oncology trials or cancer drugs. And so there's always been this fascination with bodies in my life. And I didn't really put that together until I finished school, you know, until I finished writing a thesis about it, you know. It's just like, why do I care about body? Oh, okay, okay. So one of my favorite projects that I found a few years ago is by artist Nick Hanselman, and it's called Body Fuck. And so he based the project on an esoteric language called Brain Fuck. It's based off of 8 characters. And so what Nick ended up doing, he did this for his MFA thesis at UC Santa Cruz, is he took the language and he hacked a connect.
Can we explain that a connect is this like motion tracking, like camera thing?
And what he did was he took the esoteric language of brain fuck and then he associated certain movements to those characters. It almost seemed absurd. Like, why would someone expend all this energy? It's to prove a point that language and the body do actually have a relationship. At least that's the way I understood it. And that's the reason why I really love the work.
We had an artist on many episodes ago who is doing work with the virtual reality, the Oculus Rift. And I told someone that I was going to interview this person. And as soon as I mentioned that, you know, piece of hardware, they were like bristled and were like, oh, no, no, no. I wonder, like, maybe how you explain the validity of like tech art to people who maybe have like some underlying like prejudice against tech as a block.
I think another reason why people think tech art or electronic art or new media and digital or computer art isn't art is because it's functional. So like when you go to a museum and then they have touch screens that are kind of engaging the visitors, you know, that stuff is art, but nobody really sees it as such because it's also tied to education. Oh, it's supposed to give me some technology is supposed to give me something, not supposed to make me think. But I guess that's my purpose as, you know, as a writer or, you know, someone who's a curator. And I mean, I like to call myself someone who loves research. Like, I'm a researcher, you know. I think one of the things I've realized since I graduated is I'm more of a historian than I am anything else. I love making the ties between technology and social justice movements.
Okay, question from the public for you. Ask her about racism / fucked up shit in art world, microaggressions, or talk about strategies for navigating various art communities, tech-based, community-based, academia.
Wow, that's tough.
That's a pretty wide range.
Well, no, but they're related. You know, the gut instinct and reaction I had was I went to the Othering and Belonging conference and I sat in on the tech panel, and Billy Vaughn, who's this, you know, cultural anthropologist, psychologist, said something really interesting about how, oh, when something needs to be prototyped and we need technology, we build it as fast as possible. But then the minute we talk about diversifying the workforce or making sure that we have diverse voices, that's always put on the back burner. That's not as urgent. Taking care of humans, right? And, you know, and then Kimberly Bryant was also part of the, you know, panel, and she's one of the founders, or she's the founder of Black Girls Code. And she said something that totally resonated with me. She says, oh, I can create all these young, talented programmers, but I can't put them out into the world. And you know why? Because the world isn't ready for them. And I think that's a big, huge problem in the art world. Conversations about art and technology and electronic art or whatever, what have you, are always, sometimes I feel, in isolation. And more often than not, you see it with people who already know, again, this vernacular, or they're at institutions, like cultural institutions, and they're predominantly male. And I think I'm just totally, you know, inspired by, you know, someone like Jeff Chang, who talks about if you want to see anything happen politically, you have to change the culture. Because cultural shifts happen before policy and politics can happen. And I think it's true. So that actually translates really well in the art community, because if you're not if we're not actively trying to change the culture, meaning if we're not bringing in voices, but also welcoming people who aren't really aware of the different types of art forms out there, then we're not really changing anything.
So you and Ben did that, collaborated on an article in Hyperallergic recently titled,
Where Are the Women of Color in New Media Art?
I wondered if you wanted to talk about that at all. Especially our listener was asking about like racism in the art world, things like that.
There was a lot of rich conversation that kind of really came out of it. And Deep Lab is a congress of cyber feminists, and they were working out of Carnegie Mellon. And it was headed by Adi Wekenknecht. I think, hopefully, I'm not butchering her name. She got a whole bunch of, you know, women together that were working in technology and the arts. And I just, you know, started a conversation with Ben, and I said, oh, wow, well, you know, I wonder why you didn't note that there were very few women of color in the group. And while there were, you know, a few women that would be identified if they were comfortable doing so as women of color, or even queer or trans, you know, that's not up to me. You know, I'm not telling someone to out themselves. I think that was one of the criticisms that hurt me the most, is that, you know, I identify as a queer woman of color. So then to be told that I've erased another woman of color by not mentioning that, that really hurt me. I think that was one of the more challenging things to grapple with, because that's not what I did. And I would never force someone to out themselves if they didn't want to. But my question is not about the initiative or the project. I think it was just at large, too. I wanted to open up a conversation about that. And I think, to be honest with you, if people get really sensitive about that topic, and when I mean sensitive, they get angry or they get defensive, it's probably because they know that it's true. I'm glad that the conversation busted wide open. There are so many women out there that have been contributing to that field, whether it's privacy, surveillance, video game design, you know, gendering of language on the internet, internet art, net art, computer art, culture jamming, whatever the hell you want to call it. There have been women in scholarship, but both out in the world, that have been doing that. So then why wasn't the extra step taken to actually go find them?
I want to ask if you think there's any like arts organizations specifically that are doing a good job.
Well, I'm biased because one of the places that I'm going to say is Bay Area Society for Art and Activism, because we really do welcome a lot of diverse voices, even though we're so new. Well, I definitely feel that Melora Green at SOMARTS is doing a good job. You know, but more specifically, their curatorial commons residency allows for that. So I feel that they're one of the places that's really doing, to me, exciting work in regard to being inclusive.
Thank you so much, Dorothy, for talking to us today in this bizarre sunbox cafe.
And I'm so hot.
And as always, congratulations.
Pine tree?
Hey there, listener. Just a couple notes for you from old Kate Rhodes here. Just wanted to give you another reminder that on the 17th and the 24th, there's not going to be new episodes, really, because Maysoon and I will be taking a brief summer hiatus. But on the positive side, the episode after the one you're listening to right now, which comes out on June 10th, will be our one-year anniversary episode. So that's exciting. And on with the show.
As we share that crystal below us.
Mission District Supervisor David Campos is proposing a mission moratorium.
I thought they voted it down.
Let me give you some information about that,
Kate. Please do.
So the moratorium, which, by the way, there's a great video going around Facebook right now by Broke Ass Stewart. So it's actually on my Facebook page, people. If you want to friend me, go right on ahead. My name's Maysoon Wazwaz.
It'll also be in the underworld.
Yeah, also in the, right. Thank you, of course. So the mission moratorium basically proposes a temporary moratorium on construction of market rate development in the mission.
Market rate, meaning
luxury condominiums,
bullshit.
Basically. Right. So it's not about, it's not, he's not trying to say there should be no development whatsoever in the mission.
There's but that it should be for normal people.
Yeah. That it should be affordable housing, basically. And then, so there was a vote, there was this group that Campos basically presented this proposal to, and it was voted down 13-10. But then the next step is to go to the Board of Supervisors, and that's the big process that's happening in City Hall on Tuesday at 3 o'clock.
So this just happened yesterday. I hope you were there.
I hope you were there. We'll talk about results next week.
Go ahead.
Hey, everyone. I just want to let you know about this awesome, awesome tribute that's happening to this incredible dancer named Anna Halperin.
Bay Huge Area. Deal. Huge deal.
Bay Area legend. She's turning 95 this year. And in honor of her, there is a series of performances called 90.
You're tripping.
What are you doing?
You're just tripping balls.
Clip your tongue over there.
Okay,
weird.
Go ahead.
But the performance series is called 95 Rituals. It's being performed or being coordinated by Shanice Avakova, who is an incredible dancer himself and runs Ink Boat. And a bunch
teaches it.
And teaches
Mills College.
Teaches in the dance department at Mills College. But he's been coordinating a series of performances with like many, many other Bay Area amazing performers and dancers in honor of Anna Halperin. It's really exciting, actually. She deserves this honor, I think. We'll post.
We'll have the schedule and all the links.
We'll have a link.
Down in the underworld.
Yeah, so if you're interested in
seeing
some
dance. Do you appreciate dance, listeners? You should.
You sure should, listeners.
Dance is the art of the body. When there's nothing left, no cities to live in, no food to eat, when there's no paint to paint with, no canvas to stretch, all we'll have left is our bodies to dance with.
Oh, how poetic, kid. I love it. Where'd you get that one from?
Nowhere.
Your own perfect mind?
My perfect mind. We got a tweet in from a listener this week saying, what about a podcast on ethics in the art world? That's from our old pal, Mel Prest. We'll think about that and get back to you, Mel Prest.
Yeah.
We could do a whole episode about ethics. It doesn't have to be serious.
It's pretty serious topic.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I think it would be silly.
I don't think so.
Just got to get the right sound effects. So anyhow, we're thinking about addressing a question about ethics. If people have more specific ethical questions or want to put their two cents in, let us know. You know our contact information.
Pets in the workplace be part of ethics? No, right?
I think you could put an ethical spin on that question. Mm-hmm. If we do an episode about that, we have to write off at the top, explain the difference between morals and ethics.
Okay.
Congratulations! You listened to another episode of Congratulations Pine Tree. Please send in all your ethical questions and quandaries for our next episode. Is that going to be our next episode then?
Isn't that our 1 year anniversary?
Our next episode, our 1 year anniversary, is going to be a real deep dive into ethics.
What do you do? Tell me more.
Okay, hang on. Can you guys we end have a the couch? Fucking show? Oh, yeah. Why? What?
What do they want? How about just that? Okay, bye.